Welcome back to Niaga Spotlight with me, Tamina Kaushi. Still here for our Malaysia Day special, we now shift the focus to Sarawak's state economy. Now, Sarawak has come a long way in the past 60 years. The state's economy is now the fourth largest of all Malaysian states, entailing 9.3% of national GDP in 2022. Sarawak's economy has evolved from primary commodities and industries to a more technology-driven, knowledge and skills-based economy. Meanwhile, overcoming historic infrastructure issues can ensure equitable economic opportunity and improved living standards across the state. Dr. Evan Lau, Associate Professor, Faculty of Economics and Business at University of Malaysia Sarawak, joins me online now to discuss Sarawak's economy in this Malaysia Day focus. Good morning, Dr. Evan. Thank you so much for making time for us. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Dr. Evan, let's begin the conversation with the big question. Now, political stability as being key for Sarawak's economic recovery, with, of course, Sarawak being the fourth biggest contributor to Malaysia's GDP in 2022, just behind Selangor, Wilayah and Johor. How important is continued political stability to this?
All right. Very good morning to everyone. So the question about political stability has always been an important, vital precondition for sustained economic growth, not just for Sarawak, but for any other countries or state in the world, or Malaysia in particularly. So in the case of Sarawak, of course, political stability has become one of the important ingredients in that sense to ensure that we can achieve the economic growth that we want and sustain with the political stability. This is because the country that has stability would be able to implement the economic plan, and of course with a greater speed and effectiveness in a much more shorter period of time. Give one example. With the political stability, a state or a country, or in this case Sarawak, will be resilient for external shock. Just give the best example of what happens for the past few years of the pandemic. So under this turmoil or the crisis itself, with the strong political stability, we'll be able to arise from this downturn and all the other challenges. So of course, the stable political environment in Sarawak would build a stronger economic buffer to be more resilient and to move forward, as what been mentioned just now earlier on, being number four largest in the country and it contribute to the national GDP.
Sure. Thanks, Dr. Evan. From there, moving along into, of course, unemployment rates, as well as, of course, expanding investments in Sarawak, all key and all interlinked as well. Now, unemployment in Sarawak, in fact, has dropped to 3.7% in 2023, which is very encouraging, though it's still a little bit higher than pre-COVID rates, Dr. Evan. So let's now talk about creating job opportunities and attracting investments in Sarawak. What is key to this, and what are some recent developments that, in your view, have been encouraging?
All right, let's talk about the, of course, from the point of view of unemployment and creating more job opportunity while at the same time attracting investment into Sarawak. Of course, the key point just now that I mentioned earlier on is on political stability in one sense. So that's the macro view of the whole Sarawak here. So creating job opportunity and attracting investment is, of course, another approach that need to be capitalized by Sarawak with the unique strength while addressing the challenges like unemployment. The first one, of course, as all might know, Sarawak over the past few years invest a lot also with the help for the federal government in terms of infrastructure development that covers up from the land up to the digital infrastructure. That's very much important. The second one, which I think very much important, is how we can promote further sustainable and responsible tourism in terms of ecotourism, events and festivals that would create more job opportunities for Sarawak itself, for the people in Sarawak. The third one, which is very much related to education and skill development, so upskilling, reskilling, this is way higher education institution like University of Malaysia Sarawak would play a significant role in ensuring such talent is developed for Sarawak. And of course, that would attract more investment coming in, which is the fourth factors that I'm going to mention about attracting the FDI. So there's a lot of incentive perhaps coming into tax break incentive for companies willing to set up the operation in Sarawak. And the fifth one, which is the last one I'm going to mention, will be talking about promoting how entrepreneurship, local entrepreneurship will be much promoted in terms of creating more opportunity, job opportunities. This is very much important, as I said just now, on reskilling, upskilling to provide the opportunities, mentorship, training program for the local startup. That will be encouraged more direct investment, foreign direct investment coming in also.
Yes, and speaking about that, Sarawak recorded, in fact, total investments of 32 billion ringgit and created more than 5,000 new employment opportunities in 2022. And just going through quickly, several investors also firmed up their investment intentions, submitting applications for government consideration, including for proposed basic metals for electrical vehicle components. And this is a project from Hong Kong worth 6.3 billion ringgit, and yet another one from Australia worth 900 million ringgit for EV components and such like. So it's clear pointing to lots of FDI, lots of investment. Dr. Evan, however, though, does this point towards Sarawak being a high income state? What about equitable economic distribution and development?
Having talked of the high income state that been pointed out by the World Bank a few months back. So, talking about the equitable distribution and, of course, the development, this is very much important. Of course, it's important. This is a good so-called headline, a good positive spillover about we achieving high-income state. But more important also, you also raise concern about the income distribution, rural, urban development, and overall the well-being of the society. Not while we want to pursue the high status, it's significant, it should not just be the sole focus. This has been done also by the Sarawak government in terms of the Sarawak post-COVID-19 development strategies, PCDS 2030, in which the agenda prioritized transforming socio-economic well-being by fostering sustainable and inclusive economic opportunity for all. So it's not just about achieving the high income state. And of course, in PCDS, they also recognize the importance of social indicators like education, healthcare, facilitating the human development, contributing in the end for the high, sustainable high income. It's not just achieving it at one time, but we have to be sustaining so that the spillover positively will be impact for the whole society, inclusive for everyone to carry forward. So for me, this is rather crucial to carry out all the effort has been done by the state and then promote it more to ensure that also promoting environmental sustainability so that we also at the same time preserving the resources, natural resources for the future generation.
Exactly. And of course, it's important to point out that income-wise, at least, Sarawak is still clocking in a medium household income that is lower than the national average, absolutely pointing back to what you discussed, Dr. Evan. So from there, let's discuss infrastructure developments. Pan Borneo Highway in Sarawak, it's 94% complete as at April 2023. So what will be some of the positive net benefits of Pan Borneo Highway being fully operationalized, and any other infrastructure projects that Sarawakians are looking forward to?
Yeah, the Pan Borneo Highway is, of course, has been discussed for numbers of years now. And finally, hopefully we can see it 100% completed this year. This, of course, the Pan Borneo Highway will bring more opportunity as I said just now at the beginning, on the connectivity. So this is road connectivity, has also been proven by, of course, our Yang Dipertuan Agong have just experienced the journey from Sabah to Telok Melano here in Sarawak. So once it's been completed, everyone would know that from that point of view that this is so-called another infrastructure project, big infrastructure project, mega infrastructure project that will also uplift the connectivity. It will bring forward to economic growth because connectivity connects the cities, town, remote area, smooth transition of goods and services and the people. And that will increase also trade. Of course, it will facilitate investment coming in, like manufacturing, tourism, and other sectors along the way of the Pen Bonio. And as I mentioned just now, tourism sector will be much more easy access for the Sarawak tourism spots, national park, cultural sites, and pretty much that the state have focused also on much of the tourist numbers, foreign tourist numbers coming into Sarawak. And social impact, of course, it will bring the urbanization, connectivity improve, and we move forward the urban development, more access to the service, perhaps in terms of cultural exchange, and all the other spillover to the other economic sectors, the agriculture, real estate, and employment, as one of the main question, our concern just now. This will bring also employment and will reduce the unemployment issues, not just for Sarawak, but for the country itself. So, of course, the Pen Bonio will bring forward more benefit rather than a negative impact, as from my point of view. And I think the other big project that the government, the state are focusing on will be on the bridge connectivity between the cities. And I think the government would be also want to have a second road, other than the Pen Bonio, to connect the major cities in Sarawak here.
It is all an interconnected web, and of note is that 526 million ringgit has been spent by the Rural and Regional Development Ministry as of June 2023 for Sarawakian infrastructure. And to summarise just this, the recurring challenges faced by agencies and ministries regarding infrastructural development in Sarawak include these locational factors, a lack of funding and investments, and a lack of coordination and cooperation between stakeholders and public resistance. So if all of these are also to be suitably addressed, then, of course, it moves towards a better infrastructure future for Sarawak. Dr. Evan, moving on from there into telecommunications, let's talk about the progress on perhaps the MOU which was signed in June to address telecom issues and, of course, the general connectivity that Sarawakians experience across the state.
All right. In terms of telecommunication infrastructure, I think this is one of the crucial elements, and of course the challenges that can be addressed either by the by the Sarawak government and all the other stakeholders that you mentioned just now. We need to find the equilibrium between all these stakeholders and we move forward from there. So one of the, of course, the geographical condition in Sarawak here would make the whole thing a little bit more difficult, but not a no-no for the state, because all this infrastructure development, as we mentioned just now, like the Pen Bonio itself, would bring forward and also the spillover towards telecommunication, and this is very much important. In the whole Sarawak, whether we are connected through the road, and also through the digital connectivity. So this is the next thing, or the ongoing projects that have been done, and of course with all the MOUs and related, that talking about where to go after this, how we're going to pivot, how we're going to find the middle way of connect the communities, driving the economy, and of course providing access for everyone. And the investment of telecommunication infrastructure will be very important, because the state have invested in digitalization to digitalize not just the economy, but moving forward, that will bring forward more positive impact back to the growth of the country. So this also would also bridging the urban-rural divide. I believe it would do so. And with the continued investment, and all the proper solution tailored for Sarawak unique challenges, that will be essential to have this full telecommunication potential that will benefit the whole Sarawak itself.
Indeed, and roughly about 6.1% of Sarawak's population, particularly those in the more rural areas, actually, in fact, lack sufficient internet connectivity at this point in time. Another point to add, July this year, Minister of Utility and Telecommunication, Datuk Julahi Narawi, said the Sarawak government will be also evaluating coverage and commercial aspects of Starlink satellite broadband services for possible use in the state. We of course, hope to bring some updates on that in the near future. From there, Dr. Evan, moving into offshore interests, oil and gas in particular, with Petronas Carigali delivered 6 new oil and gas discoveries across 5 blocks offshore Sarawak in July itself. What are some more investment opportunities, even for the upstream sector and exploration, that this very good discoveries bring about?
Yeah, of course, this is a very significant interest, not just for Sarawak itself, but for the country, of course, because I mean Petronas Carigali. And from the point of view from Sarawak, this, from my perspective, is that this, of course, will create more investment opportunities, not just upstream, downstream, but perhaps the other state, local investment would also invest in certain parts of the sector, so that that will also boost up their income. Perhaps a company, a firm would invest in this particular sector near this, the new place of discovery. And it would also bring job opportunities for the local, especially. And on the other part also, because I guess it's because, I mean, we talk about the here in Sarawak itself, then this will also bring certain income towards the state itself, because Petronas would, of course, would have a deal of how we would, talk about the income and whatnot, what kind of proper percentage and whatnot coming back to Sarawak itself, which going to be invest and going forward from there. I think that's what the way forward, and this will be bringing more better opportunity for Sarawak and for the people in Sarawak.
Thanks for that, Dr. Evan. Moving in proper into what we have mentioned briefly at several points before, tourism. Now, let's talk about diversification of tourism, ecotourism, as well as sustainability, particularly looking at the fact that Sarawak expects visitor arrivals to exceed 3 million target for 2023 and moving beyond leisure tourism.
Yes, tourism is rather one of the significant contributors of the income for Sarawak, and we have not just the place rich because of the ecosystem and because of the ecotourism. I would share some of the things that I would think which is will be benefited and have been done by the by Sarawak itself. So we have a rich cultural place. Like Sarawak is a home of indigenous group, and of course with all these distinct tradition, festival, craft. And like, for example, the Rainforest World Music Festival is one of the famous attraction here in Sarawak itself. And what we can offer also adventure tourism, culinary tourism, and of course, health tourism, wellness tourism, which is, and to add on, sport tourism. So some would come here to run a marathon here in Sarawak. We have Kuching Marathon, Mirim Marathon, the Sibu Marathon, Bintulu Marathon, and whatnot, which will bring perhaps more tourists. So this is what the state and also the local authorities will be able to pack to go further in that particular regards. And to add on a little bit on ecotourism, we have all the national park, community-based ecotourism, and of course the accommodation, and you can experience, you can stay in the types of very much community, stay with the community and experience what they do day in, day out. So that's the big second point. The last point will be on, of course, sustainability. We have to ensure that all of this is under the purview of sustainability, means that it's environmental responsible tourism with proper infrastructure, and how in the same time we promote and want people to come in and enjoy the environment, enjoy the locals' attraction. At the same time, it should be sustainable so that this will bring forward, of course, for the next generation. Right. This is very much important for the future also.
And of course, matching also the lack of people available for employment in this specific sector. In fact, the Sarawak's post-COVID development strategy for 2030 goals shows that there's about a lack of 17,500 workers for the tourism industry alone if you want to meet the year-on-year target of growth for 7 to 8% by 2025. Very interesting facts there. Dr. Evan, moving into the green hydrogen economy, of course, the new plant planned in Rumbos by 2025, but it's also all about balancing ecological impact, right? What do you feel are some of the key focus areas that must be addressed in order to ensure sustainable development in this area, green hydrogen economy?
Yeah. Of course, this is green hydrogen economy is one of the new positive or the economic sector that will drive the Sarawak economy itself as a whole. And the government have invested on this particular big project itself. So it's a ongoing itself, as we mentioned, in Rumbos by 2025. So we have to strike the balance. I agree that we have to strike the balance and find the equilibrium, the balanced approach. We grow and at the same time it's sustainable for the locals, because to build this plant and whatnot, environmental concern would be one of the issues there. But I believe that with the proper planning, the engagement, community involved, all the stakeholders involved, we can find that type of balance which have been ongoing with this project itself, beside what we have of hydroelectric dam and related. So this is another form of income for the state. So a proper planning is very much important. The implementation is very much important to safeguard and to achieve the balance and to sustain the economy.
Sure. And Dr. Evan, just to end off, what would be the budget 2024 wish list, top of it, for Sarawak?
As been said, the budget 2024 or even for the budget 2023, the government do provide some necessary development infrastructure and investment for the state itself. So I'm pretty sure that I feel that one of the priorities still will be on the Sabah and Sarawak and Sarawak in particular. So not just on the investment, not just on the development projects, but of course now we can channel more towards the people, addressing the middle income, the small medium industry, which is also important not just for Sarawak but for the whole country, but Sarawak in particular. The continuing of the support from the federal at the same time under the Rancangan Malaysia ke-12 so that it will focus more on how we can move forward much more faster to bring forward all this recognize the growth of the Sabah and Sarawak itself and Sabah also to be inclusive with the other states in West Malaysia and to provide the necessary better, much more opportunity of job and meaningful salary for equitable opportunities for everyone. I think that's one of my wish lists, which I think will be tabled, the budget 2024 will be tabled next month.
Excellent. Thank you so very much, Dr. Evan, for sharing all those insights with us. Of course, we wish you Selamat Hari Malaysia, Happy Malaysia from all of us here to everyone in Sarawak. That was super insightful. That was Dr. Evan Lau, Associate Professor, Faculty of Economics and Business with University of Malaysia, Sarawak. Now, this has been Niaga Spotlight with me, Tamina Kausji. We'll see you next Friday with more business analysis and insights. Here's to a productive week ahead. And once again, Selamat Hari Malaysia to all Malaysians.